Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Point of View.
Discussing the world around you.
On the street.
On the air.
And at kaya959.co.za.
Well, we do actually have the Deputy Minister on the line with us. It's Deputy Minister for Women, Youth and Persons with Disability on the line with us. And I said, you know, this is really an issue that I think we have been spoken about for a while, and we keep releasing these statistics that are horrifying. So it really is my pleasure to welcome on the show Deputy Minister Steve Letsike. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to you and as well as the listeners. Thank you for the invitation.
You are really highlighting just what a crisis point the country is at when you look at, for instance, the stats of teenage pregnancy in the country, and you're saying this is unacceptable. Something has to be done.
Absolutely. I think, you know, as you have highlighted, this is something that we've spoken about as a country for far too long. We know this is happening, that child and teenage pregnancy is at an alarming rate for our country, with over 90,000 pregnancies registered in the last year alone of girls aged between 10 to 19, and amongst the 2,328 of those pregnancies were girls between 10 to 14. These are children. These are our children who are impregnated, who are raped, who are experiencing vulnerability for many societal issues that we need to confront. And we have then said, after speaking for this long, for so many years, something has to be done. And that's why in the seventh administration, we said we need a coordinated response. We've done it before as a country. COVID took us back. That's why the increase of the number we've seen that is taking us into a challenge. And we must confront all the number of issues, including poverty cycle, including gender-based violence, including sexual abuse, child sexual abuse, education exclusion, and the toxic popular culture that have normalized that when a child is pregnant, we keep it under the radar and we don't want to do something about it. And why we call all society to say we are going to all act on it to protect the future of the girl child.
You're saying it's not just a public health issue, it's a social justice emergency. And you're saying, you know, of course, we've got to start with looking at the reasons behind these pregnancies. But as you're saying, it's an emergency and something has to give. Let's just maybe, you've highlighted some of those. Let's maybe talk a little bit to the issues behind why so many teenage pregnancies.
Well, I mean, I think a number of issues that we must not ignore. And the significant number, of these very same pregnancies we're talking about results out of rape, statutory rape. If you're looking at children between that age of 10 and 16, anyone who has sex under the age of 16 shouldn't be consenting for that matter. And if the girl is, forced or coerced into sexual activity by older person above 16, it's considered statutory rape. It's rape in our country. It's illegal activity. It's a criminal activity and must be charged. And when we then look into the aspect of girls below that age, including a boy that is below that age, these are some of the dynamics of whether they have taken the right kind of decisions that we have to constantly deal with and really define differently under the Children's Act. But when we cannot then normalize abuse and then take it into a family conversation that does not address, what has been, exploited or exposed children into having acts that are inappropriate and that perpetrators go unaccountable on these matters. So some of these issues are there. The second one, we must not ignore whether we have implemented access to sexual and reproductive health services. When we say a health issue, is that whether a child has been empowered, you would understand that the life orientation curriculum have introduced what we call comprehensive sexuality education. This is scientifically proven. Experts who do research, who looks at youth or child development, what are the information that helps a developmental of a child to understand about the body, when to say no, when to say consent, and how then do you take care of this body that is changing for the child, and how do you protect it? So what are these fundamental decisions, responsibility, and knowledge about the body that we must impart towards the child? So curriculum that has been included or integrated in the life orientation is what we call comprehensive sexuality. It's age appropriate. It's not just about saying that if people have sex, they're going to be pregnant. No, it's not about sex education. It's about sexuality, the body, autonomy, and the development of a child, including the psychological and well-being. So those things are quite important.
If I can just come in here a little bit, Deputy Minister, you highlight the fact that this is something that we need to look at. But I remember a time, and this is not very long ago, perhaps in the past 5 years, when this was a hot discussion point, and there was resistance from families, from communities, from parents saying, we do not want, particularly religious groups, we do not want our children to be taught about these disgusting things. In fact, they framed it in much more explicit language. And the department was trying by all means to say no, to your point, it's not about teaching children how to be sexual. It's about really contextualizing information, reproductive health that will empower them, age-appropriate information. And we still find this tension where we're not quite yet there where we are giving as much as possible because there is a resistance from society.
Indeed, and I think this is where we need to confront, our own awareness as parents, as caregivers, as religious leaders, as traditional leaders, in terms of what does this curriculum include? And this is why I had to frame it in the manner I did. This is evidence-based. This is scientific proven in terms of a development of a child. The package itself speaks about respect, speaks about hygiene, speaks about body changes, speaks about a whole lot of things. And I think it becomes and is normal when we actually reject a whole of comprehensive age-appropriate education and we actually ignore that if we don't even teach the children about autonomy, about concern, about social inclusion and diversity, we miss the opportunity to bring up children who are empowered to make the right kind of decisions, to take up responsibility about their own bodies and the people around them, to make informed decisions. And we lose out that opportunity. I know that parents and society and all other stakeholders may reject it because of their own upbringing. But take an interest. Beyond what can be empowered as age-appropriate and the kind of accurate information that can be obtained from school, children will obtain information elsewhere.
Yep.
The very same parents are not prepared. They are prepared to buy a smartphone, but they are not prepared to actually go on that smartphone, block websites, block sites that may not be appropriate. They are not prepared to deal with children, to go on TV and say, no, the parental guidance is advised. Go and sleep.
It's
or
worse.
Let's talk about it.
It's so, worse. So we so don't even want easy. To talk about it ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's so easy to reject things, but actually parents are now supposed to reflect on their role. What is it that we do? If we are going to reject it, what is the alternative? What is it that we do at home to say when a parent or when somebody, a neighbor, an uncle or somebody does this, this is what you must do. We are not prepared to deal with it. And this is why we are saying to confront this sketch, including speaking about rape. Because even when a child comes back home and say, Mama, somebody did this, we say, oh, no, sit down. Let's call them
a family meeting.
We just want to hide it. We want to hide it. So it's unacceptable. Ours as government, we are taking the best interest of the child at heart. We will remove this child, but we will hold parents and caregivers accountable.
Deputy Minister, there's also an acknowledgement that has to be made about the fact that while we still, debate the issue of curriculum, we still debate, our own responsibility as parents and what access children have, there's the issue of peer pressure. These children are speaking with each other. And more frightening is that these children are having sex with one another as children while they experiment because they don't know any better.
That is very much correct, because when you look at peer pressure, when you look at inadequate knowledge and contraceptive gaps, not all the pregnancies amongst adolescents and teenagers result from coercion or rape.
Mm.
Many of it results from a lack of knowledge, lack of support, lack of conversation. A simple thing, Timelo, I can tell you. Many girls that we come across, parents fail to speak about, menstrual health. The parents fail to inform this child that when your body changes, you are going to have blood. And this blood comes as a cycle every month.
Mm.
Simple things of that lack of knowledge, allows children to explore or get wrong information that is not accurate, and it doesn't help us to prevent them. So these peer pressures that we see are as a result of not being able to tackle the issues.
Yeah.
Now, it's easy for the public, for families to blame government, but we are not confronting it. And we are not prepared to say that we want to be pointing fingers. We are not interested in that as the 7th administration. We say there's a problem. Can we confront social issues, help one another to protect the future of a girl child, the future also of a boy child, so that they can be allies even in the context of, gender equality for all?
So while there's all of that and all these conversations are very, very important, there have been some changes, and we really have to acknowledge that. So there are policy changes that have been introduced that are trying to tackle some of these issues. However, you are saying something bigger has to be done. You're calling for a war room. Maybe just give us clarity on that and why it's so important for you to take that drastic step.
Most definitely. If you look at the statistics, just recently, I gave you the number of, girls that have given birth in the last year. One thing I want to tell you, this is something we must be concerned of. We have had a high rate of dropout even in the last year. 2024, children who wrote matric for 2024 examination were just about 780,000 children.
Mm.
But actually, when you track the exact number, in 2013, we registered 1.2 million children. So that means in 2024, 1.2 million children should have written their examination.
Mm.
But only 780,000 have written examination. Now, that already tells you a significant number out of school.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not only girls. It's both girls and boys.
Mm-hmm.
But when you then look at it from a girl perspective, and I'll come to the boy one later, but when you look at it, girls dropping out often due to poverty, pregnancy, or poor performance, and it's these same social and structural issues that we must pay attention on. And as society, when a girl drops out, why are we looking at this 14-year-old sitting at home and not going to school?
Mm.
Why are we looking at a 15-year-old boy sitting at home and not going back to school? The future of a young person relies on the kind of education we have done. We have improved access to education. We provide free education. We provide support, including school feeding schemes, free kind of uniforms and so forth, that then says this future of this child can improve. So we cannot accept and sit with the shock all the time. We are shocked. No, we must act on it. It means that when we invest and we speak about the fiscal support to social development, the young people must be supported mentally and deal with their mental health, the issues of poverty, but also ultimately reach education. The scientific evidence that was provided by the Gates Foundation today, the Department of Social Development and our own, has proven to say, in fact, part of why in South Africa we've had progress over the last couple of years is because we've improved access to education. So COVID moved us back, and we are saying let's pay attention to making sure that these children don't remain or their future become blank in that. So this war room, this is not just a simple approach. Mm. This has been implemented in our war against HIV or ending HIV as a public health threat. We are then saying the concept of having all society coming on board, mm-hmm. we have to implement it the way we did Operation Sukuma Sake.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, including government, civil society, private sector, communities, traditional leaders, mm-hmm. faith leaders, we value their contribution, but we need everybody on the deck to make sure that the future of children is not just going to be in the hands of others who take advantage, but all of us are acting towards ensuring we improve, we implement the laws, but we improve the outcome of their access to anything that is needed for the improvement of their life.
Well, thank you very much for all of that. I really looking forward to, you know, obviously when things start moving and that war room actually starts doing some work. So really appreciate your time. Deputy Minister in the Presidency for Women, Youth and Persons with Disability, Steve Lizike.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.